Chapter 5. They have been wont to show themselves in the fire, and music, and the wind, and the dead stillness of the night, and the revolving years, returned the phantom scornfully. And nothing else? The phantom held its peace. But having stood before him, silent, for a little while, it moved towards the fire, then stopped. Decide, it said, before the opportunity is lost. A moment. I call heaven to witness, said the agitated man, that I have never been a hater of any kind, never morose, indifferent, or hard, to anything around me. If, living here alone, I have made too much of all that was and might have been, and too little of what is, the evil, I believe, has fallen on me, and not on others. But, if there were poison in my body, should I not, possessed of antidotes and knowledge how to use them, use them? If there be poison in my mind, and through this fearful shadow I can cast it out, shall I not cast it out? Say, said the spectre, is it done? A moment longer, he answered hurriedly. I would forget it if I could. Have I thought that, alone, or has it been the thought of thousands upon thousands, generation after generation? All human memory is fraught with sorrow and trouble. My memory is as the memory of other men, but other men have not this choice. Yes, I close the bargain. Yes, I will forget my sorrow, wrong, and trouble. Say, said the spectre, is it done? It is. It is. And take this with you, man whom I here renounce. The gift that I have given, you shall give again, go where you will. Without recovering yourself the power that you have yielded up, you shall henceforth destroy its like in all whom you approach. Your wisdom has discovered that the memory of sorrow, wrong, and trouble is the lot of all mankind, and that mankind would be the happier in its other memories without it. Go, be its benefactor. Freed from such remembrance, from this hour, carry involuntarily the blessing of such freedom with you. Its diffusion is inseparable and inalienable from you. Go. Be happy in the good you have won, and in the good you do. The phantom, which had held its bloodless hand above him while it spoke, as if in some unholy invocation, or some ban, and which had gradually advanced its eyes so close to his, that he could see how they did not participate in the terrible smile upon its face, but were a fixed, unalterable, steady horror melted before him and was gone. As he stood rooted to the spot, possessed by fear and wonder, and imagining he heard repeated in melancholy echoes, dying away fainter and fainter, the words, destroy its like in all whom you approach. A shrill cry reached his ears. It came, not from the passages beyond the door, but from another part of the old building, and sounded like the cry of someone in the dark who had lost the way. He looked confusedly upon his hands and limbs, as if to be assured of his identity, and then shouted in reply, loudly and wildly, for there was a strangeness and terror upon him, as if he too were lost. The cry responding, and being nearer, he caught up the lamp, and raised a heavy curtain in the wall, by which he was accustomed to pass into, and out of the theater where he lectured, which adjoined his room. Associated with youth and animation, and a high amphitheater of faces which his entrance charmed to interest in a moment, it was a ghostly place, when all his life was faded out of it, and stared upon him like an emblem of death. Halloa, he cried. Halloa! This way! Come to the light! When, as he held the curtain with one hand, and with the other raised the lamp, and tried to pierce the gloom that filled the place, something rushed past him into the room like a wild cat, and crouched down in a corner. What is it? He said, hastily. He might have asked, what is it? Even had he seen it well, as presently he did, when he stood looking at it gathered up in its corner. A bundle of tatters, held together by a hand, in size and form almost an infant's, but in its greedy, desperate little clutch, a bad old man's. A face rounded and smoothed by some half dozen years, but pinched and twisted by the experiences of a life. Bright eyes, but not youthful. naked feet, beautiful in their childish delicacy, ugly in the blood and dirt that cracked upon them. A baby savage, a young monster, a child who had never been a child, a creature who might live, to take the outward form of man, but who, within, would live and perish a mere beast. Used, already, to be worried and hunted like a beast, the boy crouched down as he was looked at, and looked back again, and interposed his arm, to ward off the expected blow. "I'll bite," he said, "if you hit me." The time had been, and not many minutes since, when such a sight as this would have wrung the chemist's heart. He looked upon it now, coldly, but with a heavy effort, to remember something. He did not know what he asked the boy what he did there, and whence he came. "Where's the woman?" he replied. "I want to find the woman."
"Who?"
"The woman. Her that brought me here, and set me by the large fire. She was so long gone, that I went to look for her, and lost myself."
"I don't want you. I want the woman."
He made a spring, so suddenly, to get away, that the dull sound of his naked feet upon the floor was near the curtain, when Redlaw caught him by his rags.
"Come, you let me go," muttered the boy, struggling, and clenching his teeth.
"I've done nothing to you. Let me go, will you, to the woman?"
"That is not the way. There is a nearer one," said Redlaw, detaining him, in the same blank effort to remember some association that ought, of right, to bear upon this monstrous object.
"What is your name?"
"Got none."
"Where do you live?"
"Live?
What's that?"
The boy shook his hair from his eyes to look at him for a moment, and then, twisting round his legs and wrestling with him, broke again into his repetition of, "You let me go, will you? I want to find the woman." The chemist led him to the door.
"This way," he said, looking at him still confusedly, but with repugnance and avoidance, growing out of his coldness.
"I'll take you to her."
The sharp eyes in the child's head, wandering round the room, lighted on the table, where the remnants of the dinner were.
"Give me some of that," he said, covetously.
"Has she not fed you? I shall be hungry again tomorrow, shan't I? Ain't I hungry every day?" Finding himself released, he bounded at the table like some small animal of prey, and hugging to his breast bread and meat, and his own rags, altogether, said,
"There. Now take me to the woman."
As the chemist, with a newborn dislike to touch him, sternly motioned him to follow, and was going out of the door, he trembled and stopped.
"The gift that I have given, you shall give again, go where you will."
The phantom's words were blowing in the wind, and the wind blew chill upon him.
"I'll not go there, tonight," he murmured faintly.
"I'll go nowhere tonight.
Boy."
Straight down this long arched passage, and past the great dark door into the yard, you see the fire shining on the window there.
"The woman's fire?"
inquired the boy. He nodded, and the naked feet had sprung away. He came back with his lamp, locked his door hastily, and sat down in his chair, covering his face like one who was frightened at himself. For now he was, indeed, alone. Alone.
Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.